This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. We've been talking for the last hour about, you know, what will it take? Kind of two questions. What will it take for Republicans to abandon Trump, number one? And, I mean, you know, we've seen all this. I mean, we're up to 9,000 lies now since he started his presidency, over 100 of them just at CPAC. What's it going to take? And when are Democrats going to stop listening to Republican advice on policy? That was our last hour. We'll continue that conversation. But I'd like to move along right now and find out, and talk with you about, and with Charles Sauer, about public education. We have $1.5 trillion of student debt in the United States right now, something that has never happened before in the history of the United States and does not exist in any other developed country. There's no other developed country in the world that has, in many of them, there's no student debt whatsoever because college is not only free, but in countries like Denmark, they actually give you a stipend of $500 a month to go to college. And, I mean, it can be hard to get in because you've got to qualify. You've got to demonstrate you've got the ability to do it. But for people who are not college bound, they have, apprenticeships and things like that. But, why don't we have free college in the United States? Back during the Reagan, when Reagan came into office, 80% of the cost of college was paid for by federal, state, and local governments and university endowments. 20% was paid for by tuition. And that's how I was able to go to college. I didn't graduate, but I was able to go to college working at a gas station and as a dishwasher at Bob's Big Boy. Pretty much everybody else was able to, too, back in that day. And now, after Bill Bennett started reversing things as Reagan's education secretary, now 80% of the cost of college is paid for with tuition, and 20% is essentially subsidized. On the line with us is Charles Sauer, libertarian economist and president of the Market Institute. He's the author of the new book, Profit Motive, What Drives the Things We Do. It came out yesterday. Marketinstitute.org is the website. You can tweet him at Charles Sauer. It's Sauer. Charles, congratulations on the book publishing.
Thanks, and thanks for having me back on.
My pleasure. So if we're going to do away with free college, then why not? Well, first of all, what's your take on free college? Let me get to that.
Well, I don't think that there's such a thing as free college. Even when we talk about some of the countries you mentioned in the intro, college isn't actually free, and the student debt ratio is nearly the same. And when you talk about what a student can possibly make when they get out of college, it's actually worse in a lot of countries. So if we take Sweden, for example, the student to debt ratio there is something, the student debt is something like 85% of the students graduate with debt, and their student to debt ratio is high as well. In the U.S., it's actually lower, even though they're giving away free education. The takeaway here is that free is never free, and that's like an economics 101 lesson for anybody.
Wait a minute. So you can go to college for free in Sweden, but you're telling me that people graduate from college in debt. What is that, just from living expenses, from not earning a living while they're going to college?
Yep, about 100% of the students in Sweden take out student loans or receive grants, but because they have the free student loans, they treat it differently in their they treat education differently in their family. So yeah. Most of the students are moving out. In the U.S., a lot of parents are subsidizing some of the living costs. And so we're just
Charles, you're doing a bit of a bait and switch here, because I'm talking about the cost of education and you're talking about the cost of going to school. And those are different things.
You're talking about the part of education that you want to make your argument. I'm actually talking about the full cost of education and what it costs.
Well, that's fine. I get that. And I think everybody is clear that that's what you're talking about. What I'm talking about is the cost of education itself. And as you correctly point out, it's free in Sweden. It's free in pretty much every other developed country in the world. I remember when Louise and I were in Costa Rica, the taxi driver who drove us out to this place where we were shooting for this documentary, from the airport, it was about a two-hour drive, got a long conversation. I said, what do you think about living in Costa Rica? Oh, I love it. You know, what's great about Costa Rica? My son's graduating from medical school, and I'm a taxi driver. How is that? Oh, we have free college here, and I have free health care, and everybody has, because, this is Costa Rica. It's like, I don't get why we can't do that. So are you suggesting that we should keep our college system as it is, extraordinarily expensive, with $1.5 trillion of student debt that is All, by the way, paying, or probably the vast majority of it, paying for tuition, because that's pretty much the only thing you can get many student loans for is tuition. It's not, or tuition and books at the most, but you can't, you know, get student loans to pay for the cost of, and as you correctly point out, a lot of these people, particularly young people, you know, live at home.
I'm not saying that. And if you really look at the graphs on where the student tuition prices started increasing, this is something you again mentioned in the intro. They start increasing at the same time that the government started coming in and taking a part in education and taking a part of the expenses. And the schools are—
Wait a minute, Charles. California had free college up until Ronald Reagan became president. There were no student loans then. I went to college in the 60s, in the late 60s, 1967, 68, and I have no recollection of anybody other than one friend of mine who was in a master's program who had any student loans at all. I mean, nobody ever discussed it. Nobody ever even thought of it.
Yep, and the government hadn't fully taken over the student loan market at that time, right?
There was no student loan market at that point. But back to my question. So are you saying
the government involved in the student loan market and what?
So if you don't want the government involved, then again, you're changing the subject. I'm not talking about the cost of living when you're going to school, and I'm not talking about the student loan market. I'm talking about the cost of education, the cost of college, and I'm suggesting that one of the things that we know from the GI Bill, our experience with the GI Bill, and we can actually just look at any other country, but one of the things that we know is that every tax dollar that we spent educating, sending to college people like my dad and my wife's dad, every dollar that we spent as a country, we got back seven additional dollars in tax revenue we wouldn't have had because those people earned more and therefore paid more in taxes than they would have earned had they not been college graduates. So we know that this is not an expense. This is an investment that returns a 700% return on investment. Why wouldn't we tomorrow morning say, okay, that's it. The cost of tuition, and all we're talking about here is tuition. The cost of tuition is now zero. We are going to fully subsidize this. Why not do that?
See, you blame me for changing the argument, but then you add in a little subgroup, and this is not a little subgroup, I'm sorry. You add in one of the best subgroups to get a number from, the GI Bill. That is totally picking the numbers. You admitted at the beginning that Denmark—
It was 8 million people. That's a huge cohort if you're doing statistical analysis.
It's a cherry picking of students. The fact is you, if you do free universal education, it's not universal education. It ends up being the smartest and the most elite that get in and the people with the most crony connections. And that's why the left wants it, because they're going to create the power.
Okay, so if you want to prevent there from being free college for all or for anybody who can qualify to get in, if you want to prevent that, do you want to do away with K-12 too? Right now we have free K-12. It's state sponsored. You want to do away with that? Like Betsy DeVos does?
Just like your trip overseas, I've had many cab rides over here where the father is paying for the student to go to college in the U.S. and he's happy that he immigrated here. In fact, one of my last neighbors, it has his kids going.
Do you
want to
end free public, you know, you don't want to have free public colleges in the United States. And by the way, that's the proposal that's made by most progressives, including Bernie, is not all colleges have to be free, but just publicly owned institutions, you know, the University of Michigan kind of thing, or Michigan State, you know. But are you then, again, I'll ask the question, if you think that the state shouldn't be funding education above the 12th grade, do you think that the state should be funding education below the 12th grade?
I've seen a lot of good arguments that say that it shouldn't. I'm not going to go and make that my policy stance at this point, because just like Ocasio-Cortez jumping the boat and not understanding that there needs to be some sort of progress to get us off of oil before we just start burning all the trees in the world, the fact is we can't go from where we're at to a private system tomorrow. It's something that would take thought.
Well, this is what Betsy DeVos is doing. I mean, in Michigan now, over half the schools are private charter schools. They've privatized education in Michigan, largely as a consequence of the efforts of her and the people associated with her foundation and her family. You know, it's multi-billion dollar, and she's now proposing $6 billion for more charter schools all around the United States due to what they did to Michigan, do it to the rest of the United States. And as a consequence, public schools in Michigan in many places are you know, collapsing essentially. What I'm hearing you say is that you'd like to get there, but you want to make a transition. You don't want to just pull the plug tomorrow.
No, I'm saying that it's worthwhile to look at. And if you're following your examples from the GI Bill, the numbers I've seen from the charter schools seem to mimic that. If students come out better prepared, that the investment in a charter school seems to be a better investment. So I understand your use of the GI Bill, and I'm glad that you're using it, but you should apply the same idea and the same conclusions to the charter schools. It's one of the problems with the left is there's too many arguments to keep track of, so they don't make sense when you run them at each other. But the charter school argument is the same as the GI Bill.
Charter schools do not have better outcomes than public schools do, Charles. There's no shortage of studies showing that. In many cases, they have far worse outcomes. And the biggest consequence of private, particularly for-profit charter schools, is that they gut the public schools, particularly when they pick and choose who they can take. And the public schools end up with the most expensive students to teach without the resources. And everybody says, oh, it should be the same. And it's not. I mean, this is...
I have seen the research on both sides here, and every time I've seen one that's come out against charter schools, it seems to be skewed in multiple ways. And the ones that say that the charter schools are producing the better students seem to be the ones with the good research.
So families should be taking out loans to send their kids to fifth grade in addition to college.
Look, as long as we have a better debt-to-income ratio than the countries that give out free education, then the answer is yes.
Wow. Okay. Charles Sauer, his new book, Profit Motive, What Drives the Things We Do, marketinstitute.org. You can tweet him at Charles Sauer, S-A-U-E-R. Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back. What do you think? Should we do away with public education? And welcome back. Zach in North Hollywood, California. Hey, Zach, what's on your mind?
Morning, Tom. Yeah, on the Republicans, I think, you know, we've been trying to compromise with these guys for 50 years, and we got to stop waiting around for them. That's my take on that.
But I'm with you.
Yeah, my main point is, going into 2020, I think we really have to make the distinction between the Bernie-style, rest of us silent majority kind of Democratic center versus the blue drog fence-sitting centrist. I mean, it's just an immense difference between the two.
I don't exactly understand what you're talking about.
Well, I mean, there is two different, there's such a different thing between a centrist and this silent majority that is really, you know, not the left. It's a left-leaning center.
Right.
It's much bigger than a centrist.
In other words, you do the surveys and you find that 80% of people want, you know, right across the board, 56% of Republicans even want Medicare for all, for example. Large percent. These are all poll above 80%. Expanding
right.
Social Security, increasing taxes on rich people, breaking up big banks, ending monopolies. All these things that are being portrayed on CNN and MSNBC and other corporate media as extremist leftist positions,
as if they came right out of
the old Soviet Union. Are in fact the middle of the road positions of Americans. They're just not the middle of the road positions of Democratic politicians. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the media that gave us Trump is never going to admit that there's this huge silent majority that isn't getting any voice. You know, I mean, it's, you know, we're fighting 40 years of paid propaganda and slant on the airwaves, and we're seeing how it can wreck a country.
And it's getting larger. I mean, what's the site? Snopes. Snopes just did investigative reporting. And this website must be growing because they're doing investigative reporting now. And they just published a report on their website at Snopes.com that all around the country, there are these, quote, local newspapers that are popping up as websites. You know, they don't actually publish a newspaper, but it's a website that looks like a local newspaper. And it's like the Tennessee Star, right? That kind of thing. You know, the Detroit Tribune, whatever. These are not the actual names, but they sound like local newspapers or statewide newspapers. And they are, in fact, funded by the Koch brothers through Americans for Prosperity. And they work to the benefit of local Republican politicians. And they've got, you know, all kinds of news stories, local news, national news, and that kind of stuff. And they always feature, and in a very favorable way, the local Republican politicians. And this is like the new fake news. I mean, it's, yeah. you know, it's like this ecosystem, this infrastructure, this media think tank propaganda infrastructure that the Republicans have built since Lewis Powell recommended they start doing it in 1971 is breathtaking in its size and its scope.
The movie shouldn't ever be about Trump. It should be about the true collusion between the media and the GOP through all of this.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you, and at the level of the corporate of the boardroom, frankly, for many of these corporations as well. Zach, thank you. Very, very, very well said. I appreciate the call, and thank you very much. It's 21 minutes and change past the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls. Do you think that we should? You know, I can you actually make an argument that we should end free K through 12? I mean, we didn't even talk about pre-K, right? And that we should keep our colleges as expensive as they are? Try me out. We'll be back. Welcome back. We're talking about education. We're talking about policy. We're talking about where the Democrats should be. We're talking about when are Republicans going to stop listening to Donald Trump, right? When is this going to happen? And I'd like to add another topic to the mix. And this is amazing. It just, you know, it just kind of blows my mind. The in Idaho, you can get married at basically any age. And I mean, literally any age. And when you look at this in the Gem State, Idaho, the youngest Idahoans to say, I do, you know, in the 2000s, I mean, just in the last 18 years, were 13 years old. 13-year-olds are getting married in Idaho. And 85% of the people who get married who are, you know, pre-16, 85% of them are girls. There's a few boys, and presumably those boys are also are marrying girls of the same age, but who knows? But 77% of those 13-year-old girls who are getting married in Idaho are marrying adult men. That is to say, not teenagers, right? People who are beyond the teenage years, men who are beyond the teenage years. And this is legal in Idaho, Kentucky, Washington State, Florida, and Texas. And Idaho, the Democrats, the House Democrats, there are only 14 Democrats in the House, in the Idaho House of Representatives. And they proposed legislation to establish a minimum age for marriage, to say you can't get married unless you're at least 16, right? At least 16. It would eliminate marriage licenses for people who are 15 years old or under. And it failed with 39 Republicans voting to kill it. Only 28 people voted in favor of it. All of the Democrats, all 14 Democrats, and apparently 14 Republicans. And but the rest of the Republicans, all 39 of them, said, no, we don't need a minimum age for marriage. And, you know, on its face, this looks like, or seems like, you know, this whole issue seems like one of just like, you know, propriety and morality. But I think it's actually much larger than that. I think that the issue of basically children, particularly girls, being able to be married is really about male power. If a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old gets married and starts having children, I mean, their life is under the control of their husband forever. I mean, it's game over. There's no education, there's no job, there's no nothing. And yet this is happening across the United States. And like I said, I see this as it's not even misogyny, it's not hatred of women, it is control of women. I guess misogyny includes that. And this is part of that structure, that patriarchal structure that we have had in this country that we have had, you know, since the beginning of what we call Western civilization. I mean, going all the way back to Sumeria 7,000 years ago. You know, when are we going to wake up and shake out of that one, too? And how do the Republicans in Idaho justify this? I would love to hear from a Republican who thinks that there should not be a minimum marriage age. I don't.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
So a lot on our plates here. We'll be back with your calls in just a moment. It's 27 minutes past the hour and change. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And boy, we've got a lot of topics on the table here. Alan in Springdale, Utah. Hey, Alan, what are your thoughts? And by the way, Utah. I was thinking Utah and Idaho. Utah's just next door to Idaho. It's not Idaho. Anyhow, what are your thoughts on this education thing?
Yeah, Tom, I think you're right on. By the way, I saw you and your guest, and I might be watching a rerun on Free Speech TV. I don't know if this was a topic from the previous day, but at any rate, you're right on.
Are you talking about Charles Sauer?
Yeah.
Yeah, Charles was just on. We're live. It's not a rerun.
Okay, there's just a delay, I guess, between what I'm seeing on the screen. But anyway,
oh, yeah, there is. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, the knowledge, the literature, the science, whatever, is part of the commons. It's a public good. It shouldn't be a private good for, you know, any particular entity's exclusive profit. But I think part of the problem with the cost of higher education is that the people that run the school system, whether, you know, in the government or the boards of regents and so on, they're part of a, you know, upper class power system, and their salaries keep going up.
Yeah, you've got college presidents in some cases who are making over $1 million a year.
Yeah, yeah,
which is crazy.
And I'm seeing a lot of money spent on facilities too. The universities say that, I mean, they need facilities, but they say we need the best facilities to compete for the best students, the same elitist mentality. But at the same time, as you see all this going on, you see teachers getting paid less and less, starting jobs as adjuncts, getting, you know.
Yeah. That whole adjunct professor thing is basically you're an Uber professor. I mean, as in Uber or Lyft, you know, that kind of thing. It's a gig. It's the gig economy has come to higher education. So what do we do about free college education? And I'll just use that phrase, free college education. I think that we should, if we can borrow $1.5 trillion, and use that money to give it, you know, give that money to billionaires and corporations, then, you know, 83% of it went to the top 1% of America, and then, you know, much of the rest of it went to big corporations. If we can borrow $1.5 trillion in 1 year for a tax cut, why can't we borrow $1.5 trillion in 1 year and pay off everybody's student debt, put the student loan companies out of business, just end them, and have all public universities in the United States free? I mean, if Harvard wants to charge $60,000 a year, fine, have at it. But the University of Georgia, Michigan State University, you know, all of the, yeah, we've got a great infrastructure of publicly funded, you know, publicly built colleges. The land grant colleges, 54 land grant colleges across the United States, those were built by Abraham Lincoln specifically to be free colleges. And they were called land grant colleges because they were granted these huge chunks of land that they would work to earn the revenue that would pay for the school so that people could go to school for free. That was Lincoln's idea. And MSU, I mean, they used to have, anyway, they probably still do, working farms there and things. It was an agricultural college, you know, and they would be testing, you know, new hybrids and things. They do research. They do all kinds of things that generate money for themselves. What do you think?
Yeah, Tom, I agree with all that. I support all that. I think that there needs to be one other thing going on here, though, which is that there isn't much coordination, or any, as far as I know, between what's available in school and the demand for jobs. There's a big mismatch, you know.
Yeah.
And so the solution needs to be part of a larger systemic solution that involves...
Well, and you wonder to what extent that exists, because for-profit colleges are out there basically selling college education And they're not so much interested in whether or not the people can find a job when they leave college. They're just interested in getting the tuition dollars. I honestly don't know the answer to whether that's a big piece of that or not, but it seems like it might be.
It's a really hard thing to talk about, because then we could get into the problem of whether education should be just for earning a living. But
I don't think it should. I think liberal arts education is an important thing, and I think people should be. I think philosophy, for example, logic, these kinds of core things, history. Should be required courses, even if you're a math major, even if you're an engineering major, whatever. And increasingly, people are able to avoid that stuff. Alan, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. It's an excellent one. Pam in Challenge, California. Hey, Pam, what's on your mind?
Hi. You were talking to that man about the education, and he brought up a subject that I have a right-leaning friend that has also brought up, that if government wasn't involved in helping students with, costs, that tuitions wouldn't go up. The tuitions are so high because government is involved with student loans. So, and that the more money government throws towards helping student educational costs, that in turn causes colleges to raise tuitions.
Right. So if this is the right-wing argument.
Tuition would not go up. So what's the basis of that argument?
Well, that's the right-wing argument, and their argument is that, you throw money into a situation and it starts chasing itself or something. I don't understand the logic of that, because back when government paid 80% of the cost of going to college and college tuition all across the United States, at public universities anyway, at MSU, for example, or U of M, 80% of the cost of college was paid for by government, and only 20% was paid for by tuition. So to say that if government is, or if students are now paying that 80%, but they're doing it with government money that is loaned to them, that that's causing tuitions to go up, that doesn't make any sense to me. It's a nonsensical argument.
It didn't make sense to me either.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Right. Thank you, Pam. Appreciate the call.
Bye.
Laura in Maple Valley, Washington. Hey, Laura. Thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Thank you for taking my call. I was calling about the first topic that I caught today, which is, why we still listen to the Republicans and what we can do about that. I wanted to give an anecdote from my life. You can't work with them. I left an abusive marriage a few years ago, and it's basically the same thing. The only way I ever accomplished a divorce was I took any remaining doubt that he might have some good ideas or be right about something, and I killed it off. And in order to do that, I really had to identify that some of my ideas were good ideas. That took a while. But once I finally realized some of my ideas were good and better, and then I killed off the idea that he would ever be right about anything. Like, there might be an accidental correct thing in there, but otherwise he used it totally wrong. Then the second thing I did was I plugged my ears to his accusations, his threats, the manipulations, the demands, any apologies. And by plugging my ears, what I mean by that is a ton of emotional processing, not responding, and talking to my, sympathetic friends for all that processing. It was hard to do.
Right.
But basically, I just stopped responding to them or making any decisions based on them. And the third thing I did was I appealed to every single higher authority that I could. I stuck any authority I could between me and him, restraining order kind of thing, courts, lawyers, legal advice, court orders, and I just kept pointing at those. They're higher authority than either me or him. I couldn't
right.
stand against him on my own, but when I had those higher things to point to, it gave me the teeth, that I needed.
Yeah.
And today, what that looks like is our Constitution. And, some of the Democrats are really doing these things. They're kind of just saying, look, we have to do what we have to do. We're not going to listen to these people. That's the very best attitude right now. We need each other for the support. It's hard. You have to do what you have to do, Tom, and you have to just kill off the idea that they have anything of value to say.
Yeah.
And then we can do some things. That's my opinion.
That's a compelling story, Laura, and congratulations on getting through and out of an abusive relationship. So the analogy, just to be clear, the analogy that you're making is that Republicans who support Donald Trump are essentially in an abusive relationship, and at this point in time probably don't yet realize it?
Sure. I would add that section. What I'm talking about is the Democrats are, like, trying to get out of one.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going. The Democrats are trying to get out of one. And anytime you sit down across that dinner table and you say, but honey, don't you think that we should treat the children kindly? And, you know, what you get is, no, slap, you need to get out of that marriage.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's what the Democrats need to do. We yeah. can't even talk. You can't even talk to them. They don't have principles. You've said this yourself. They will pull any action, any tactic into the circle to use against you. Anything from kindness, reasonability, oh, come now, reason with me, threats, demands, accusations, pulling in the press, pulling in your friends,
yeah.
you know, convincing everybody they're awesome. This stuff is really hard. It is complete deception. It is warfare, but...
So how do we, Laura, we just have about 15 seconds here left.
Sure.
How do we convince Republicans that they're in an abusive relationship?
You get out yourself.
Well, I think most Democrats.
I get that. But then from there, you have more strength to be able to say, come on out, it's safe over here. I know it's hard. I will help you.
Yeah. Okay. So we need to reach out and have compassion. One of the things I think is that if you simply demonize the Trump followers, you're going to drive them deeper into Trump's arms. Because they're the victims. They're not the perpetrators in many cases. Laura, thank you for the call. A very enlightening call. Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's 45 minutes past the hour. We're going to be checking in with Talk Media News in just a few minutes. Bob Ney will drop by and let us know what's going on in the world in about 4 minutes. And welcome back. Max in Germany. Listening on Progressive Voices. Yes. Hey, Max.
How you doing?
Where in Germany are you?
I'm in a little town outside of Rosenheim.
Okay. So what's up? Hello? Max, you're breaking up. Try it again.
He was talking about higher education.
Okay.
And the costs in Europe.
Yep.
A little bit on what that last lady said. These people flat lie. I went to the GI Bill in the U.S., and I also went to school in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And in both cases, I came out debt-free.
Right.
Absolutely debt-free.
Right.
And the GI Bill, I once did the calculation, and it paid me about $20,000 in total for all my education. And in 3 years, the government got all that back in taxes.
Sure.
So it is a good deal.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The thing about these guys flat lie. And my only thing when I listen to you is you take them as normal people, and they're not. They're what that last lady said. They will do anything and say anything because they're just paid that way. And that's the only comment I wanted to let you know.
Okay.
First of all, he lied to you. He lied to you flat out.
Yeah. Well, what Charles was doing was it was kind of a classic example of figures don't lie, but liars can figure. That not to call Charles a liar, but you know, I was talking about tuition, and he was talking about the cost of living when you go to school, and those are completely different things. And
yeah,
and
like
in Sweden,
they're liars, damn liars, and statisticians.
There you go. Max, I got to move along. Thank you for the call. It's great to hear from you, and thank you for listening to us in Germany. Idris in Omaha, Nebraska. Am I saying your name right?
Yes, this is. This is Idris, Tom.
Idris. Hey, what's up?
Yes. Not too much, Tom. I'm a longtime fan. Two quick notes. I want to tell you, my wife and I are millennials. We recently were married, and we were just discussing student debt, and collectively we have over $1,500 a month in student loan debt.
Oh, my God.
And my wife asked the question, and I didn't know how to answer it because maybe you can break it down, is, if we're paying the government, how much of that student loan is private and how much of it is to the government in terms of if there was a government forgiveness policy towards the government owned of it and if there was a one-time payment made towards the private part of it? Is that
right.
even feasible? Because We just don't understand the economics of it.
Well, there's different kinds of student debt. There's student debt that comes from private lending institutions, and there's student debt that comes from the federal government. It was during the Clinton administration that the Democrats basically very proudly announced that the government was going to start making a profit on student loans. And isn't that a good thing? And, you know, a lot of us were sitting around going, should the government even be in the student loan business? I don't think so. And then there's private loans that are government backed. And so there's these different varieties. But all of them cannot be none of them can be discharged through bankruptcy. And that's, in my opinion, a crime. Idris, thank you very much for the call. It's great to hear from you, and I wish you the very best. Greetings to your wife and family. And I hope you can get out from underneath your student loan debt. And in fact, I hope that all of the people in this country with student loan debt can get out from underneath it. We'll be right back with Bob Ney. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com, Ellen Ratner's little charity and in South Sudan, and her book, Loving What You Do. On the line with us is former Republican Ohio Congressman Bob Ney and the author of Sideswiped, the book that outs John Boehner and all the awful stuff he's up to. Bob, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Tom.
So what's going on in the world today of consequence?
Well, let's go to climate, since we're talking about the world. And I find this fascinating. It just, I think, goes to show that the American public, they're fluid when it comes to, you know, where they were last year, where they are this year on different issues. Now, it can work for or against somebody, but the climate polls are interesting. Now, this is out of NBC and...
You're talking about a belief in climate change versus a denial of climate change, right? Among the public?
This is the GOP position, which last year 54% of the Republicans polled said that the GOP position was outside the mainstream. This year now, it's 63% of all respondents, these are Republicans, believe that the GOP position is outside the mainstream, whereas on the Democratic side is 35%. So, you know, it's changed. Now, this is, you know, on the heels of the Obama-era policies, which the Trump administration is trying to roll back. So, obviously, this is going to cause, you know, a problem for the White House when you see these types of polling. And by the way, it wasn't on a specific proposal. It was on the generic terms of, you know, climate change, it's a crisis, it's not. So I think that's pretty significant.
Yeah, it is. That is.
Finding.
Yep.
And then the other story, which has some big-time repercussions, I believe, for the 2020 election, is the sort of positive news that the deal between China and the United States on trade is close, you know, and of course they're talking about the premier coming to, I always get it wrong, Mar-a-Lago. I haven't been down there, so yeah. I kind of get that
Neither
wrong.
Have I. I think it's
you
the.
You haven't been invited? I'm in shock.
Yeah, I think it's the French or Spanish word for sea.
Okay. So there's a deal being announced, but it would be the suspension, the rollback of $200 billion worth of tariffs that were instituted, you know, on Chinese products. And it's with, and this is fascinating, it's with the promise that China would have economic reforms that would therefore be positive, of course, for American workers. Now, the administration's trying to look at how it rolls it back, because obviously China's pretty clever. We've seen that over the years. And if it's rolled back instantly, then China could go back on the deal. But the reason I say that this is big, you know, a critical point, I believe, in the election between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton was the fact that Hillary Clinton could not convince some typical workers who care about trade issues in Pennsylvania, for example, and that was a big electoral college, you know, vote. Mm. She couldn't convince them that she, you know, would be on their side, right, on the trade issues.
Right.
So a big part beyond the wall, of course, was Donald Trump and trade issues.
Yep.
But now if this deal is cut, and by 2020, you know, the Chinese do what the Chinese always do as a government, this could be a real stumbling block for the Trump campaign.
Oh, I think it's even worse than that, Bob. I've read several articles this morning in the Financial Times, the New York Times, and on Axios about this so-called deal that Trump is trying to work out with them. And it looks to me like he's just trying to save face. He's trying to back out of this thing. He's asking them to buy natural gas and soybeans. He's trying to get the farmers back on his side. He's trying to jack the, you know, help the fossil fuel industry. But he wants to declare victory and go home, basically, without having actually won the war. And not even having won a skirmish, you know. And because the tariffs are hurting our farmers very, very badly, and he just didn't do it right. He thought he could do all this stuff by executive action, and nobody's going to build a factory because one president signs an executive order that's going to last for 2 or 3 years, that might be repealed by the next president. You have to have congressional action. Congress needs to pass actual tariffs or an actual trade policy rather than the president just declaring something. But the problem is that that's not how Fox is going to portray it. They're going to portray it as a great victory, and people are going to go to the 2020 election thinking that the jobs are coming home because Trump did this amazing thing with China, when in fact it's all BS. Mm-hmm. That's my take.
Well, yeah, and I think you're right. And I mean, this was the mainstay of the campaign.
Yeah, I know, and that's why I think that no matter what happens in 2020, you know, yes, of course the jobs are not going to come back. Trump is just going to say, well, it's just going to take another couple of years. Don't worry, we worked out this deal. It's going to happen. That's what he's going to say, and it's all going to be a lie because that's what he does.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of union workers, and I know because I was in some of the meetings, and a lot of union workers got they were so afraid and so disgusted, and you know, looking back on promises not kept, you know, over the last 20, 25 years, right?
Yeah.
And so they took a chance. They didn't necessarily like Donald Trump whatsoever. But they took a chance thinking maybe this is going to be it.
Yeah.
Maybe something will be done.
Oh, I know people in Michigan, you know, people that were high school acquaintances of mine who voted for Trump purely on that issue. They wanted the factories to come back, and they believed him. They thought he was going to make it happen. And I think that they're going to probably continue to believe him, and they're going to believe that he cut an amazing deal because that's what he's going to call it, and that's what Fox will call it, and that's what right wing hate radio will call it, but it's not what it's going to be. So anyhow, we still have a minute, Bob. What else is going on in the world?
Sure. Well, then the big story of the day is the investigations that are starting today up on Capitol Hill, which has the generic abuse of power, which is going to be fascinating. It'll involve 60 different people, at least for now, in the beginning. Mm-hmm. 60 different people that will be requested for information. It'll be fascinating to see the reaction that the White House takes, because they'll, of course, claim executive privilege, although some of the people will not be able to claim that because they will actually be people, we're told, that are involved or have been involved with the Trump business empire.
Yeah.
And those people won't be able to shield, you know, under any form.
So
of
far, these are not
order.
These are not subpoenas. These are just requests for documents, right?
Right.
That are voluntary.
It can progress down the road.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll see how this shakes out.
Right.
I frankly would like to see them just go in guns blazing with subpoenas. But you know, they're taking this cautious, step by step approach, and
I'm sure. A little bit of fear.
Yeah. There you go. Bob, right. Thank you so much for dropping
thank
by.
You.
Bob Ney, thank author of Sideswiped. That we talk media news. It's coming up on the top of the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.